For some, this voice will be familiar. For others, it'll be the first time. You're listening to the MMA Hybrid podcast with Corey Richmond from the Work Shoot Wrestling podcast and from one of the best blogs on the internet, Christopher Morin from morinslaw.com. Chris, this is a very exciting time. We've got UFC 178 right around the corner coming this weekend. This card is so loaded that the former champion, Dominic Cruz, isn't even on the main show. So we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Chris, how are you doing today?
Corey, I'm great, and excitement is an understatement in terms of the UFC. Dana White, the Fertitta brothers have to be beyond excited about this coming card based on the unfortunate happenings, and we'll get into that in a second on news and everything that's transpired for the UFC this year with low pay-per-view buy rates, you name it. This has been a very forgettable year for 2014, but hopefully the UFC can go out with a bang within the next few months.
Absolutely. For every TJ Dillashaw, you've got some unforgettable cards, to say the least. But before we get into some of the news of the week, I just want to let people know about us. Because like I said, you know, you're hearing two new voices on this podcast. Some of us out there may know me from the Work Shoot podcast, know you as a guest, or from your very insightful, to say the least, blog every week. When you have a random idea that just got to get off your chest, which is always entertaining. But how did you get into MMA?
Well, I recall MMA from the very first UFC show. I remember UFC 1. I remember having illegal cable back then and catching Gracie Shamrock and just seeing how barbaric it was. And it was always fun to just see like a small guy like Gracie beat these 250-pound monsters who just look like the typical brawl for all fighters, if you will. And it's something that, how would you not want to be intrigued by that? It's just something that has followed me forever. I mean, of course, the UFC had its dark days where it was essentially removed from pay-per-view, and then it reemerged. And now these last 10 years have been very intriguing, to say the least. And now it's mainstream. Who ever thought UFC would be mainstream?
Absolutely. Like I said, when you're turning on Fox, you know, on Sundays during football, and you're seeing advertisements for UFC, you know, cards, you're sitting there going, wait, this is something that, you know, you used to think of as, you know, fight to the death. That was how people used to say, you know, the ultimate fighter, who's going to survive, you know, a sumo guy versus a karate guy. It was a spectacle, and now it's something that people actually care about. This is, you know, my start is actually a little bit, not from when you started. I went and coming in as a fan of boxing who got a little bit fed up with, you know, fights that were one-sided. I was, you know, still am, was a wrestling fan, going through a bit of a dark period. I'm not sure what I wanted and didn't want. But I was watching, you know, Monday Night Raw one night, and afterwards there was The Ultimate Fighter. So I've been a fan for, you know, a good amount of time now, over 10 years. But I started like I think a lot of fans did. They were watching, you know, maybe watching WWE programming, which I know might be a little bit of a curse word to the true MMA fans out there, you liking wrestling. But I was watching The Ultimate Fighter. I got brought in by Bonner, you know, and all the stories going on there. And it slowly built, watching Quinn Rampage, watching Tito, who we'll most likely maybe talk about later on in this show. But it was the big names that got me in there, and then it slowly turned into, wow, you got this guy named Uriah Faber, you've got these small guys, you got WEC, and it became loving, you know, wrestling, and then turning into loving UFC, MMA, and the balance shifted. I don't know if that kind of happened with you a little bit because of wrestling became boring at times, but it was very interesting to see how you started off watching it because it was just on after wrestling, then it turned into something replacing wrestling.
No, I missed it. There was a huge void in my life when the UFC was not available anymore via the pay-per-view circuit. I forget what year exactly it was taken off, but when it resurfaced, it was a blessing because people missed it. And I'm surprised that WWF fans at the time, and then, of course, WWE later on, that more people didn't get into the UFC or just MMA in general, based off of Ken Shamrock, if you recall his ties back then.
Of course, the Lion's Den, and I think a lot of WWE fans became in when Brock Lesnar, who was back with the WWE, but there's always rumors that he could come back for one or two more fights when his contract expires, which that's more of something you would listen to on the Work Shoot Wrestling podcast, but we'll stick with MMA here. But that's just a little brief overview of how the two of us got into MMA. Like I said, Chris has been there from the beginning. I've been, you know, watching pretty consistently for over 10 years now, and I really enjoy it. I hope everyone who listens to the podcast can see how much we enjoy it, even though at times we may kill the UFC on some stuff they do, may not, you know, be total homers for everything that goes on, right or wrong, in mixed martial arts, but we're always there in a loving idea, going and saying, we love this product, and we want to see the best possible thing go on.
With that said, let me ask you a question. Who is your favorite fighter of all time, MMA?
Wow. Maybe because I read his book, and I read some of the stories and stuff, but I've always loved Uriah Faber. And it's,
really?
I've always been a big fan of the California Kid. I loved, not as a fighter as much as a talker, but, you know, Chael Sonnen really brought something. Okay. I know that he never won the big fight, but, you know, his, you know, that WWE mentality.
Yeah, you can't get any closer than it did against Anderson Silva. I mean, he was literally 4 minutes away from winning the fight.
Yeah, you went 24 minutes out of a 25-minute fight. And unfortunately, you know, a sporting event doesn't end early unless there's a rainout. In UFC, that's not what's going to happen. So you got to fight all 25 minutes. He fought for 24, great. And, you know, the Spider went and made it count when it really, really mattered.
And my favorite fighter of all time is the legendary, and I still say the greatest heavyweight of all time in mixed martial arts, despite the lack of respect from Dana White, which we can get into a whole nother topic on that, the legendary Fedor Emelianenko, who is now retired. His fight just changed the way you look at fighting, the way he entered the ring, because in Pride there was no cage, the way he entered the ring with no emotion, zero emotion. That's just a different level of a fighter, because you get to see all these guys today, they're all hopped up on energy, they're all popped, you know, just ready to go, and he just walked into the ring, and it looked like he didn't care. It looked like he just rolled out of bed. And 30 seconds later, you're tapping out to some kind of Kimura or another submission that he would create all the time. I mean, the way he escaped positions, the way he... I mean, he probably could have lost 5 fights earlier in his Pride career that he just managed to find a way to win. And that's why, to me, he is the greatest despite never stepping foot in the octagon.
And, you know, it is kind of, and like I said, we're going a little off topic here, but it's great to see how much we can reflect back on things. It's really sad how his career ended. I mean, if not the greatest heavyweight of all time, maybe not the greatest fighter of all time, he ended with losses to Dan Henderson, for Verdum, who's fighting for the heavyweight title, coming UFC 180 in November. But the way that it ended, his legacy, maybe not in your mind, is a little bit shattered, but there's something there that you go, if he was never going to go in the UFC, maybe it just should have ended, you know, a little bit earlier, and we didn't have to see this last part of his career.
Well, the reality was he wasn't that old. When he lost, he was, I believe, just 34, 35 when he finally lost to Verdum. And if you remember, he got caught in a triangle against the best submission specialist in the game, period. So therefore, it was a matter of him not respecting Verdum's ground game, which is a huge mistake on his part. But ultimately, going forward, of course, getting basically taken to the ground and beaten by Bigfoot, and then somehow getting caught from Henderson when he was in control of that fight. Look, he lost a step. That's what happened. He lost a step, and the fighters sometimes lose a step when you just they don't recover. And, I mean, he did now, while you're not aware of this, he did go out with a couple of wins in Japan. So he didn't exactly go out on a loss.
True. But, I mean, like I said, the biggest stage he could have been on that, you know, the U.S. fan would know of, it didn't end well. That's all I'm saying there. But let's move into a little bit of news for the UFC and MMA in general. And when we say MMA, that's mixed martial arts. And the UFC is not the only form of mixed martial arts there is. It's the biggest one. It's the equivalent of the WWE. But there are other places that Bellator, which is on Spike TV, World Series
of... Which is basically the TNA of MMA.
And then you've got World Series of Fighting, which I guess you could say is the ROH of the wrestling industry. And you've got much smaller independents around the world, which, you know, is where the crop of these guys, when they wind up in the UFC, they usually are fighting there first. So, like I said, you may not know of some of these guys, but at some point you might actually see them in the UFC. So it's always interesting to see where these guys come from. And one of the guys that we'll be talking about later on the show that came from Bellator will be fighting in the co-main event against Donald Cowboy Cerrone. So you got to pay attention.
Mr. Alvarez. It's a long time coming for Mr. Alvarez. That's absolutely. That's for sure.
And you know what? I think that could be... That might be the best fight on this show, and that's saying a lot for how deep the show is, which we'll get into in a little while. But
yeah.
To start off, about a month ago, we had a little bit of a brawl in Vegas between the light heavyweight champion and the number one contender for that title, John Jones and Daniel Cormier. They had their little stare down, and the Nevada State Athletic Commission went and said, you're not going to be suspended, but you're going to have to go and pay a fine from the purse from this upcoming fight and doing some community service as a result.
Community service? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was like, community service? Did they attack an old lady? I mean, don't forget, John Jones rescued an old lady from a mugger in New Jersey at a show about 5-6 years ago. It's amazing what good things that you can do for people and they don't come back to help you, right?
Exactly. John Jones is getting... 40 hours community service, and Cormier gets 20 hours of community service. So, you know, we'll see what they'll have to do. If, you know, someone will be dusting the sides of the street or picking garbage, but I don't know if that's exactly how that's going to turn out. But
wait, is that the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard? Community service?
I know it is. It's kind of ridiculous. But like I said, you know, it is interesting to see what they do to go and hype up a fight in a year where the UFC has had tons of injuries, had a huge upset with TJ Dillashaw. But the big thing that people are going to remember is the stare down in UFC and the ridiculousness of Tito Ortiz and Stefan Bonner at Bellator. So, I mean, it is the spectacle which still gets people interested.
Well, they have to sell pay-per-views, especially the UFC right now, considering all these last, 5-6 shows, actually the entire year, if you look at the buy rate for 2014, the unofficial buy rate, because UFC does not release it because they are a private company. So therefore, we don't really know the official numbers. Regardless, though, it's been a big hit to the overall revenue of the UFC. They've lost money this year. There's no way around it.
Absolutely. Like I said, I mean, what is your initial thoughts on when these type of things happen, where it's supposed to be this big moment to go and get Cormier, who's a little bit lesser known by every sentence that we can think of, and John Jones out there to go do this press conference, and then it turns into this disaster. I mean, I think it pumps up the fight, and now that the fight's going to be later on in the beginning of next year, you have more time to build on it. But do you think this is a black eye for MMA, or is this just another part of the spectacle?
Not at all. Not a black eye in the least. I mean, it's part of the game. People know this. If you're a casual fan and you're offended by what you saw, then you shouldn't be watching. Ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised if Dana or the Fertittas or whatever, they just said, listen, we want to get 1 million buys. Now, they may have been hovering close to 1 million buys regardless, just because of those two names. I think they may have gotten 1 million without this spectacle, but going forward, you might be talking up to Brock Lesnar numbers for this fight when it does occur, if it occurs, because we know with injury, nothing is guaranteed in the UFC.
You just said that key word. Another injury to a big name, another huge main event which has to be canceled / moved down the line. In this case, they actually got a great fight to replace it, but UFC middleweight champion of the world, Chris Weidman, the guy who beat the Spider, Anderson Silva, twice. You can say both those victories in their own way could be a little bit fluky, but that's not for me to judge. But he's now going to be
that? You're over here saying it, and I'm thinking it. I was like, I can't say Fluke, can I? But you said it.
I don't mind being the bad guy when I have to be. But Chris Meinman was supposed to face the, how do we put this nicely, the druggie, Vitor Belfort, who...
No, he's drug-free now, don't forget. And in fact, people were saying, how would he make 185 pounds? Because people thought he looked anorexic.
That's true. That is true. But I guess it gives him more time to go and eat a couple of more burgers so he can possibly, you know, reach the limit. But Chris Weidman's going to be out. But we're going to get one hell of a fight to replace it, which is good. Like I said, you would love to have seen both fights on that card to make it one heck of a doubleheader for UFC 181. But we've got the rematch of the welterweight champion, Johnny Hendricks, coming back for the first time against Robbie Lawler. Now, do you think this is a big enough name value? I don't know how much you think Chris Weidman was a name value to begin with, but do you think Lawler Hendricks 2 will either draw as well or worse, better? Where do you see that coming about?
Well, I think Weidman showed in the past that he's not that big of a draw by himself. I think that Weidman and I don't have the numbers for the last one in front of me, but I don't know because, I mean, don't get me wrong, that fight was of quality, but I didn't think it was. Now, again, this is another example of the UFC taking a hit for their pay-per-view show because, I mean, 81 looked like a really solid card, and now you look at it and you go, oh, that's what it looks like. So it's just, it hurts. And then we've been talking all year. I mean, look, ever since the UFC signed on with Fox, everything is saturated. It's oversaturated. You get too many shows, you get too many fights, you get injuries, and then you have to go, what do? We don't know who to put in the cage because we don't have anybody, because that guy just fought last week. And then, oh, that guy just fought 2 weeks ago, because we have to continuously put out fights. And now you have Fight Pass on top of it.
Which, speaking of Fight Pass, we just had our latest Fight Pass event, which feel like they're every week. From Japan, you had Mark Hunt with the second round knockout of Roy Nelson, who has never been knocked out before then. So, I mean, that's a pretty big statement on its own. But, you know, it's crazy that there's so many of those events. You had Miles Jury look pretty darn good. I thought that Misha Tate didn't look great. I thought she kind of looked a little lackadaisical. I mean, I don't know. Maybe when you're going up against a person who isn't on your level, you take it a little bit easier, but that's how when you're in a real sport, these type of things could, you know, you could get upset. Just ask, you know, Rick Story.
Well, yeah, not only that, but when we talked about rankings, and we'll get into rankings a little bit more, when you look at Misha Tate's opponent, she wasn't ranked. So immediately you think, oh, she's a tomato can. But ultimately, as we find out with, I forget his name, who fought recently on one of the fight nights, an unknown could be good. Just because he's unranked, we don't know anything about him. We've never seen him before. So Misha Tate may have been in with somebody who could be a future champion for all we know.
That's true. But like I said, before we move on, what's your thoughts on Lawler versus Hendricks? Do you think that's a good fight, an average fight? How do you really have any interest in that fight?
No, I don't. I'll be honest with you. I'm happy you went back to it, because I was thinking about it as you were talking about it. And, man, I mean, that's a fight that could end in the first 5 minutes. But I know the last one went all five rounds, which shocked everybody. So, I don't know. It's just not one that I care about.
Right, like I said,
I think a lot of the audience may feel the same way.
I mean, Robbie Lawler, you can say, might be the biggest turnaround success story in a very long time, where he basically, when Strikeforce was bought out, everyone thought once he lost to, I think it was supposed to be Josh Koscheck. I might be wrong on that. I have to check that during the break. But everybody thought he'd lose, and then he would just, the rest of his huge contract would get destroyed, and he'd be gone. And he is gone and had one heck of a resurgence, to say the least.
Well, he has, yes, but, I got a good example right here for you. Hendricks versus Lawler on pay-per-view, UFC 171, 300,000 buys, that's it.
Oof. That is scary. But you know what? Before we move on to our last story in the news for this week, that card actually might be a little bit better than you first thought. The formerly Wyman Belfort, which now will be Lawler Hendricks 2. We've got the UFC Ultimate Fighter Coaches 20 facing off. Anthony Pettis, the champion, versus Gilbert Melendez. That should be a pretty good fight. We also got Travis Brown versus Brendan Schaub. So, I mean, it's not a great card, but the top three fights could be pretty entertaining.
Yes, I agree with that. But here's the thing. There's been a pattern lately with the UFC. If you look up their unofficial pay-per-view buy rates, the smaller fighters don't draw. They really don't. And by the way, I stand corrected on Weidman. But this is more of a Silva. Their second fight did over $1 million.
Oh, and you also, I believe with that fight and the fight afterwards, Weidman did have some woman named, Ronda Rousey as the co-main. So, I don't know. I think you may want to give a little bit credit to Ronda Rousey bringing in some people, especially with all the mainstream publicity she gets. So, I mean, we'll see on that. But the last story. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Last thing. But conversely, UFC 175, Weidman versus Machida, only 545.
That's, you know what, 545 is, if this was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, 545 would be a pretty good number. Now, in the post-Lesnar GSP, two guys who are no longer with the company, that number doesn't sound nearly as good as, you know, it should be.
No. All right, I'm sorry, continue. Let's finish the news.
And our last story, this one came a couple of days ago. The number three company, which we spoke about sparingly, World Series of Fighting is going to go to pay-per-view in the second half of 2015. Now, that's great. That's not the interesting part about this, but with this unprecedented idea, them actually going from, you know, shows that used to be on tape delay, they're going to go to a revenue-sharing model that will pay 50% of all net revenue earned from live pay-per-view events it produces to the fighters featured on the telecast. Now, twofold.
Sorry, I have one question.
Yeah, sure.
What is 0% of zero?
Bellator?
No, meaning when World Series of Fighting goes to pay-per-view, what is 0% of zero?
No, exactly. It's zero. Well, I was also making a joke on the idea that Bellator doing a second one at some point, which I think they're supposed to be guaranteed to do, I don't think it will do much better. I mean, even though the first time Bellator did a show, it actually did a lot better than expected. So,
but they had some injury issues. My thing is this. If you look at the WSOF roster, is there anyone on there that's going to make anyone put forth a dime to see a pay-per-view?
Well, it's all retreads from UFC, so I mean, there might be a slight market in there, but I would definitely agree with you. I mean, you have to realize though, you know, it's a couple of guys that are doing well on the main roster of UFC right now, who we thought both most likely were finished, had their resurgence in there in Arlovsky, who just won again, and Anthony Johnson, who is slowly getting himself a chance at a shot at the light heavyweight title. And if you would have told me that couple of years ago, I would have thought that, you know, you had eaten maybe as many or more jelly donuts that Anthony Johnson was eating on fight day.
Okay, well, I'll say this. Let me say this briefly. Anthony Johnson is still a young guy. He wasn't done when he went to the World Series of Fighting. Arlovsky is now in a heavyweight division, which looks like it did when we had Arlovsky in it 7 years ago.
Yeah, oof, those are some dark times, and that's putting it nicely. Do you have any other thoughts on the idea of them going to pay-per-view? Do you think this is something that they should actually take a chance with, or do you think this is something that could bankrupt the company?
I think it will bankrupt the company. I don't know how they're going to make money off of this. If no one's buying, when you go back and you look, by the way, I have it in front of me, all-time pay-per-view buys, some of them official, some are unofficial. I believe Matt Lindland against Fedor drew 13,000. My question to you is, can World Series of Fighting draw at 13,000?
I believe that. Was that the first Affliction show, I believe?
No, this was not Affliction. This was Bodog.
Oof, Bodog. I remember their commercials. you know what? I don't think anyone expected Bellator to do a 100,000 buys when on their attempt at pay-per-view. And, I mean, they had a much better roster. So, no, I think if they get 13,000 buys, they would have a better chance than TNA does right now of, you know, getting a TV deal with Spike TV. I can see what you're saying. It could bankrupt the company or it could give this company a secondary life. I'm going to go with you. I think that this could be the beginning of the end if they actually go through with the idea of pay-per-view. But we'll be back with some more, including a lot of talk about UFC 178 this weekend, which, like I said before, is one hell of a stacked card. This is MMA Hybrid Podcast. We'll be right back. If you hadn't had enough of us after one segment, we're back. Talk a little bit more about the wonderful world of mixed martial arts, the good, the bad, and the ugly. In the news segment, we spoke definitely about one of the uglier things that happened the last couple of months. And one of the things that we didn't get a chance to bring up was John Jones is going to lose not just money out of his pocket that he already from the fight. He's going to lose a substantial amount of money from one of his key sponsors. He's one of the few guys who actually was able to get this type of sponsor, and that sponsor was Nike. Yes, Nike, the sports and athletic brand. They weren't too happy with it, and now he's going to be out six figures.
That's a lot of money. I'm really surprised Nike took this stand. It's not that big of a deal what happened. It's a fight. I mean, nobody got hurt. I can see if people were hurt in this. Did you hear of anyone being injured during this incident?
Not that I know of, but like I said, you know, it's a big deal, and I think that because he has a past when it comes to not exactly about being the most responsible, it could have tied into it. He had a DWI, you know, about a couple of years ago now. He might have, you know, saved a woman the day of his biggest opportunity against Shogun when he won the title. But I guess being a fighter and with the whole Ray Rice situation and other things, they decided to cut their losses.
I don't even know if is it really a loss, though. I mean, it's a loss for Jones and maybe them going forward because, I mean, he's a lucrative player in the fight game. I mean, he's potentially the face of the company right now. Well, and you just get rid of the face of the company over something that was related to the fight game. He didn't do anything off the field, technically speaking.
Agreed. I mean, I think it's promotion. I think it's basically similar to what, you know, Chael Sonnen did every time he opened his mouth when he was trying to get the fight number two with Anderson Silva. He promoted, and it got a little physical. It was made the UFC look a little bit bad, but in the long run, that's going to get more people to buy the fight than most likely did before. And like you said, they don't have that many draws now that, you know, Brock Lesnar's gone, GSP's gone, Chris Weidman's hurt again.
Silva, Sonnen, all these guys.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting situation, to say the least, and we'll see if he can ever get back Nike and if Nike decides to actually put its money behind another mixed martial artist, which could be an interesting thing to follow down the line. But moving on, we've got the big event, which we spoke about earlier, UFC 178, which is so packed that a former champion is actually headlining the Fox Sports prelim, and that would be Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz, who never lost his title. Some people might say, including myself, that he didn't win as dominantly in the rematch against Uriah Faber. Just one person's opinion. I personally think Faber actually may have won that fight, but that's a long time ago. We don't have to get into that, especially the fact I'm sure you'll disagree with me. But after 3 years...
Not. You don't know that. People may agree with you.
Well, if you do agree with me, you know, you could always tweet us at MMA... excuse me.
Hairball?
Yes, we are the MMA Hairball Hybrid Pod on Twitter. No, you can contact us if you have any opinions on the Faber fight from a couple of years ago, which, like I said, I thought he won. People might disagree. You can contact us at MMA Hybrid Pod, which we'll always, you know, take a look at, see, you know, if people have any opinions on the show. But speaking about Dominic Cruz, 3-year layoff, he's made himself very marketable, I'm guessing, in UFC's eyes, due to the fact he hasn't taken any steroids, unlike Chael Sonnen, who, you know, is taking a little bit of vacation from the UFC for the moment.
A vacation? I think he's gone.
I think when push comes to shove, I think after he's gone for, you know, 6 months to a year, they'll bring him back as an analyst. I don't think he's ever going to fight again for the company.
That's a good point.
But I think he's so big of a personality that I think he's a guy that the UFC, Dana White, Fox, I think wants to be in business with. So, I mean, he's one of those guys who, especially if he's not going to be fighting anymore, I think he can be someone that they'll forgive and forget.
Let me tell you something, and I'm blown away by the fact that WWE hasn't made a phone call to Chael Sonnen, and they're not even interested in him based on what I've heard. He is a personality. He's what wrestling is lacking today, and just something we dealt with in the 80s and 90s. There's not many personalities, per se. And I always thought, like, if Chael Sonnen showed up in WWE, people would care. Like, wow, this guy has something to say. He and Josh Barnett, for that matter, I think, should be wrestling full-time in the United States when their fighting careers are over. I don't know if you agree with that.
At least Josh Barnett has done that in Japan, so at least we know that he can. I never actually saw him wrestle, so I don't know how good or bad he was. But, you know, Chael might be a great manager, great mouthpiece. For those who care, I mean, he'll be doing a event with good old JR, Jim Ross, MMA event, I think, in the next couple of weeks in Oklahoma. So we'll be able to see what he's
about to pick up.
Exactly. We'll see, you know, how he is as an announcer. But getting back to UFC 178, it's a loaded card. Former champion Dominic Cruz is returning. 3 years absence has made himself marketable in the UFC's eyes as a commentator. He didn't have to come back, but he is coming back. What's your thoughts on Dominic being the Dominator again?
The Dominator, 10-fight winning streak. Granted, it's 3 years ago, but he is as good. In fact, if you go back and look at the fights he's won over the course of his career, avenging the Faber loss, which he suffered early in his career, not so early, but he suffered the Faber loss. Then he beat Benavidez twice. Then he beat Demetrius Johnson, which, by the way, then created the joke was Demetrius Johnson can beat Cruz, so now we have to create a flyweight title for him. So basically, that's how dominant Dominic Cruz was and can still be again, because the biggest key here, a lot of people don't see, he's just 29 years old. This injury didn't occur in his 30s. So while it's a big layoff, and there's going to be rust without question, and Mizugaki is definitely a challenge, that I just think Cruz is just too good, and he's going to force the issue, and he's going to end up getting probably a decision win. Look, Cruz doesn't finish a lot of fights. 12 of his 19 victories come via decision. But he's 29, and I think we're going to see a great fight down the line, with whether it's Dillashaw or Burrell. Hey, I mean, who knows? It could be Burrell.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the many things that have happened this year. That is going to be interesting to see with the comeback, if he can win, first of all, and if he gets gets a shot right afterwards. You would hope that he looks dominant enough that it doesn't leave any questions, but you never know. You know, Mizugaki is a good fighter. It's not great, but any, like they say, you know, in a real sport, anybody can win on any afternoon.
Yeah, and Mizugaki's on a 4-fight win streak, by the way.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that we spoke about before we got on the air was the idea that maybe this fight should have been on the main card instead of the Kat Zinganu fight against Nunez. And I think that if you want your best, now if you're under the idea you want all your best fighters on the main show, I can see Dominic Cruz being on there. But like I said, Dominic Cruz has become someone that the UFC and Fox Sports One, with like the Brian Stans of the world, the Rashad Evans, he's kind of
well,
one of the.
Don't forget, don't forget about the fact that Uriah Faber recently main evented a Fox Sports 1 show.
Absolutely, and if he can do that, anyone can. And you know what? I think when you're a face of Fox Sports, I think it's something that might have been a Fox Sports decision. And if you want to keep your partner happy, I think you got to do these type of things. And like I said, it's not the worst thing in the world for the last image that the people who are thinking about maybe last minute buying the pay-per-view is watching the Dominator dominate.
And without question, and this is no slight by me on the women's division. I'm okay with it. Kat Zingano, I mean, most likely she's going to win this fight. There'll be some rust again. And then we're going to see her and Ronda Rousey square off down the line, whenever that may be again. But I always say down the line, down the road, because of injuries.
Injuries are what makes this sport as interesting and frustrating as you can see. Trust me.
Frustrating is the better word. Interesting, not so much. Because the UFC has lost so much revenue this year because of injury. I don't even know what number you can put it at.
I mean, you think about it. UFC 179 was not initially supposed to be Aldo versus Mendez. That fight was supposed to take a couple months earlier. I mean, that makes that fight card at least look acceptable now. You know, so the main event's not Glover Teixeira versus Phil Davis. But let's be honest. Injuries is what makes UFC, unlike, you know, the WWE, very hard to book and figure out what to do. Is when it is a real competition, real things happen.
Not only that, how hard is it as fans to follow these cards? They change so frequently that if you don't read the news in a two-day span, you're like, what happened? Oh, Chris Weidman broke his hand, for example. Like, you just don't. I mean, it's amazing. You have to follow everybody on Twitter because news is always breaking in MMA. It's just, I mean, I guess it's like anything else, but it changes cards so much.
Absolutely. And, like, before we get to the main card, some of the other fights that are on the undercard, which you could say maybe not both members of the fight would be on a main card, but this is a fight that has Patrick Cote versus Stephen Thompson. You got John Howard versus Brian Eversole. To a lesser degree, you got James Krause versus Jorge Masvidal. I mean, these aren't, you know, a bunch of no-names fighting on this undercard. That shows how deep this show is, and this is one of the deepest shows they've had in quite a while.
And it's really what the fans want. I mean, the fans have been begging for a show like this. I mean, we've been just disappointed so much. And again, we talk about the oversaturation of the product, but Saturday night, the UFC is going to deliver something that we haven't had. And you could say for most of the year. I mean, maybe there's been a show or two that keeps my mind at this moment that delivered very similar to what we're going to get Saturday night. And now we're going to get into and attack the main card. So let's hear what your thoughts on this main card. You can start from the bottom.
All right, well, Kat Zingano versus Amanda Nunes. I think Kat Zingano should win this fight. Like you said, it could be a little rust. It could be a little bit of a sloppy fight. But I think when push comes to shove, I think Kat Zingano has to be the choice because, you know what, I honestly don't think most people can name the top 10 fighters female at 135. So that's
you
not...
can't. I got to piggyback off that thought. You just can't. And that's when it goes back to... who's Amanda Nunes? I mean, she's not ranked in the top 15. Then how good can she be? But then it goes back to my initial thought of the earlier fight. What was the fight this past weekend? You said where Kate fought an unknown
Rena Khan.
I mean,
yeah.
Look, it may work both ways. You may get a fighter who's unranked who just doesn't. You'll see within the first 2 minutes while they're unranked, or you see in the first 2 minutes. Hey, maybe there's some potential here. So I guess it does work both ways.
And like I said, you know what? Amanda Nunes, she lost, but she fought against Alexis Davis, who's a pretty good fighter. So, I mean, it's not like she hasn't fought anybody. So, I mean, you know, at least she can be, hopefully will be competitive.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we were talking about in terms of a lot of divisions being thin. Some divisions, they have 15 fighters now, and I don't know why they did that, where they expanded it to the top 15, meaning on the UFC ranking website, of course. I don't know how ShareDog works their rankings, but top 15, sometimes you don't really need 15. You just start to say, does this guy really deserve to be ranked at all? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And like I said, I think we both say we would both go with Kat Zingano. Now, Tim Kennedy versus Juan Romero. Sorry, Joel Romero.
Joel.
Sorry, you know. I am American. We don't always do the greatest when it comes to Brazilian names. But I'll stick with Tim Kennedy. I think this is a good matchup for Tim Kennedy. I know that Romero is very good and only has one loss. But I think Tim Kennedy is on a roll right now, and I think Tim Kennedy really thinks that he can be the next big guy at 185.
I disagree. I don't see it. I think Joel Romero right now, he looks like a beast. He's a silver medalist in the Olympic Games. I mean, former because he won it back then, but you don't lose your medal, right? You can't just lose it.
Sure.
So I've seen him. He's a big guy, though. Here's the question with Romero. Does his gas tank wear out on him? Because, again, we talk about big guys, and they need oxygen to the muscles. Can he withstand a three-round fight against a guy like Kennedy? Kennedy pushes it. Kennedy makes you work. You don't get to relax against Tim Kennedy. So, but I think Romero's another guy who does that. And this is a very good fight, I think. It's booked very well. I think you're going to get an explosion. Romero's won four straight in the UFC.
Right.
So, I mean, you're looking at something interesting here.
Yeah, but, you know, the only thing I would say is the competition that Romero has faced in the UFC compared to Tim Kennedy, I just don't know if I've seen beating Brad Tavares and Derek Brunson in the UFC doesn't you know, say to me that's the competition level that Tim Kennedy should have a problem with. I mean, I might be wrong. I mean, I know that some people like Michael Bisping, other people don't. They think he's overrated. But can you tell me who on Romero's docket has been anywhere near as competitive, you know, as a Michael Bisping?
That's a good thought by you. I mean, look, I can't dispute that. I mean, when you look at Kennedy and when he went up in class, who did he lose to? He lost to Luke Rockhold. He has losses to Jason Miller and, of course, Jacare. He does have wins over Robbie Lawler and, as you said, the aforementioned Michael Bisping. But I just see Romero right now, and granted, he's 37 years old, Romero, so Kennedy's 35,
mm-hmm.
So age kind of washes right there. However, Romero, I mean, and again, if this fight goes into the third round, I think Kennedy will have more in the gas tank to get a decision victory, and you may get a split in the first two rounds, and Kennedy ends up winning the third just because he has more energy. But if Romero comes out strong, I think he could finish Kennedy early because he's just a beast. I mean, you've seen this guy, right?
Absolutely.
So that's my thinking. If it goes into the third, it's the Kennedy decision. If they are early on, I like Romero early. I think he could finish his fight in the second round, possibly.
Well, like I said, we'll agree to disagree on that one. But these next two fights, before we get to the so-called main event of the evening, I think these could headline any fight night, any, you know, Fight Pass show. I don't know if they can headline a pay-per-view, but these two matches that we'll be talking about now, I think are the two big matches on this show. No disrespect to Demetrius Johnson, but Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor, that is a fight that I would pay to see. And, you know,
but answer that question. Why would you pay to see it? Are you buying into the hype of McGregor? Do you care about Poirier?
I think a little bit of each. I mean, I think McGregor is a guy who has really come to the UFC, and yeah, he's spectacle. He's got that bravado of a Chael Sonnen, which helps. He's looked good in most of it. You know, almost every one of his fights. The one fight he didn't look great in is when he got hurt.
He broke his hand, right, against Max Holloway.
Right. And, you know, he didn't look as good in the second and third round. But, you know, he's undefeated in the UFC. He basically took apart Diego Brandão, who, you know, who's Diego Brandão? I mean, I know he's not a great fighter, but
well, he's a tough guy, though. He was on the Ultimate Fighter series.
Correct. And, you know, he fought hard. And I really do believe that he is the future of this division. I know I'm buying into the hype. In order to, you know, to do this, you got to go and beat whoever's in front of you. I understand that. But let's be honest here. Dustin Poirier, I don't think, is going to be the guy who takes who takes out the McGregor hype. Poirier is very good.
Answer this question for me. You just made, in the last fight we talked about, Kennedy versus Romero, about who have you fought. Well, who has McGregor fought, with the exception of Holloway, maybe, and if you want to give Brandao a little bit extra, you can, versus who Poirier has already fought and beaten.
I mean, you got a very good point there. I mean, he's beaten Diego Brandao also. He's beat Eric Koch, who was a top contender who never really became anything. He lost to Cub Swanson, who was slowly moving his way up to a title shot himself. He also beat Max Holloway, so they have the same. He's beat both guys that he's faced.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's true. He's beaten Matt Holloway as well. Interesting. Did he also go to decision with Holloway?
Max Holloway was a submission by triangle in the first round.
There you go. That's a little edge to Poirier then.
Like I said, you know, you could go either way with that. I mean, I think it's I think this fight could be fight of the night, even though the one that we're going to talk about next could split the honors. I mean, I know that, you know, Uncle Dana doesn't usually give out as many, you know, bonuses, but I can honestly see this match and the match we're going to talk about in a moment, all four of these guys, you know, be getting a $50,000 bonus.
I like that. Uncle Dana, is that kind of like a Mick Foley, Uncle Eric, as in Bischoff reference there? Did you just do that?
A little bit. I mean, I think I've heard it before, but I'll take credit if no one else has ever, you know, realized it.
Okay, all right.
But, you know, I think this should be a really good fight. You also have Conor McGregor, who can't keep his mouth shut, bringing up the idea that Cole Miller was supposed to fight him initially in Ireland. And when Cole Miller backed out of the fight due to injury, he was making this huge idea, just even to just sell a fight, that Dustin Poirier, who also trains with him, an America top team, should have, you know, stepped in with 7 weeks' notice. And then when he did it...
I have a question for Mr. McGregor, though. When he got into the cage in Ireland, did anyone happen to see the extensive back knee that he was sporting that night? And considering there's no state athletic commission, what was he on when he got into the cage with Brandao?
That's a very interesting point. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, let's see what happens when the drug tests come back. We'll see if he gets suspended for, you know, 9 months to a year, or if he had an irritation. I'm going to go with the idea of hoping, the idea of, you know, creating stars when there are so few of them, that Conor McGregor is clean. But, you know, you could have a very good point there.
Well, answer this question for me, because I'm just speaking now from the hip. How is the testing overseas versus here in the States? If there's no state athletic commission, how are they testing?
I believe Dana White did say recently that they were going to have testing around the world. I mean, that was one of those things where, you know, when it came to a guy we spoke about for a moment earlier, Vitor Belfort, where he was going to, even if he wanted to fight in Brazil, they were going to start doing testing, I believe. I might be wrong on that fact.
No, I think it makes sense what you said, but my question is that started already, or did McGregor slip through the cracks in Ireland?
To be honest, I'm not 100% sure, but it is something that we can look into in a future podcast.
That sounds good.
Now, I'm going to go with McGregor. I think the hype is real. I think Dustin Poirier is a good fighter. But you know what? Every time he's supposed to, there's a chance he's not supposed to win a fight, he doesn't. He was supposed to not, you know, he was supposed to lose to Cub Swanson, he lost to Cub Swanson. He was supposed to lose to the Korean Zombie, he lost to the Korean Zombie. I mean, Korean Zombie fight was a great fight, four rounds, fight of the night on UFC on Fuel 3 card. Back in May 15th of 2012, but I don't know. I like to see Dustin Poirier actually step up and win a fight where he's not expected to. I don't think he will. I think that Conor McGregor is going to move up in the rankings, these mythical UFC rankings, which, you know, we might talk about later on. But I'm going to go with McGregor. What do you think?
I like Poirier only because of the McGregor hype intrigues me, and I think he's a bit of a hothead, and I want to see him get rattled. Poirier will bang in the pocket, and I'm intrigued to see when McGregor gets tagged, what happens. I want to see what his chin is like. And remember, Poirier has submission finishes, so if he can take him to the ground and negate whatever edge McGregor may have in stand-up, how does that change the fight? So I'm going to go Poirier because I think he's more well-rounded of a fighter.
It's going to be interesting, but would you agree that this could be a contender for Fight of the Night?
Without question, but again, our next fight, which we can get into now, will probably win Fight of the Night.
Donald Cowboy Cerrone, a man who wants to fight every weekend if he could, one, in order to get bonuses, and two, because he's just crazy. He wanted to fight five times this year. I don't know if he actually is going to make it to that amount. Right now, this will be his fourth fight of the year, is fighting Eddie Alvarez, who, for people who don't follow the UFC, he may be the best fighter not to ever fight in the UFC, being a former champion in Bellator. Now, you most likely...
Eddie Alvarez goes all the way back to the Dream Promotion, which, for those who may not be aware of, the Dream Promotion basically took the place of Pride when they went out of business, and Eddie Alvarez had some phenomenal battles over there with so many great superstars, and his only loss was to Shinya Aoki with a heel hook. Other than that, Alvarez was phenomenal, and he stole the show over in Japan with his stand-up. His striking is just phenomenal.
Now, I'm going to agree with you. This is going to be the fight of the night. I don't see how this goes to a decision. These two guys love to bang. I think we saw the real Eddie Alvarez when he won back his title at Bellator. I mean, I think Michael Chandler is a very good fighter and may now be the best fighter not in the UFC. But I think this is going to be a tough fight. I'm going to go with Donald Cerrone, just because of the experience of being in the cage. And I think this will be
Second round submission for Cerrone, you said?
Yes. Get a little rear naked choke action, and it's going to be over.
Wow, that's okay. I mean, I could see that happening only because Alvarez is susceptible to the ground game. If he can get him down, what I think can happen, though, is I think Alvarez is going to stand, bang, and I think Cerrone will also do the same without the thought of taking it to the ground. I mean, I'm intrigued by the game plan. Does Cerrone say, I need to take him down because it's a weakness of his? Or does he say, because, of course, Eddie Alvarez has lost a rear naked choke submission to Michael Chandler in Bellator, so we've seen him lose via submission, and of course, I had the aforementioned Aoki fight in Dream back in 08. What's his game plan? And if it's to stand and bang, I like Alvarez. I think Alvarez might be the more technical striker. Do you agree with that?
I think he's mostly the more technical striker, but you've seen in the past, Cerrone will bang, but he's still a smart enough fighter that if he sees an opening, he'll take the opening.
Well, yeah, I mean, if he says, I'm going to take this fight to the ground, Alvarez's chances just go out the window then. But I have a question. I know we want to get into rankings later. Is the UFC serious? Did they really rank Alvarez 14 coming into this fight?
I think it has something to do with, I guess if you've never fought in the UFC, I don't know. I don't know if they can't rank you in the top 10, but you know what? He's being treated like a top 5, top 10 fighter with this fight.
I think Gilbert Melendez came in top 10.
Yeah, you got a point there. I totally forgot about that. I mean,
I think it's just Dana White. Dana White taking a shot on Bellator the way he did it on the Ultimate Fighter show when Lyman Good lost. Remember that?
Yes.
Trying to get into the house.
That's a good memory by you. I remember that. Now that you said that, but you know what? I honestly think that Eddie Alvarez can either become a star. I mean, this sounds ridiculous. A guy who has fought 28 times. But I think this guy could become a star overnight, or he could be a guy who people will think of as, okay, he was great in the minor leagues, but when he got to the big leagues, he choked. So, I mean, I think that's going to be a really good fight, and I think Cerrone's going to win this fight. But I think Alvarez will have moments where he looks spectacular.
See, this is where we disagree in terms, and it's not you, so much you, you're not guilty of this. It's the theory that the minor leagues, when you talk about a promotion overseas, like Dream, for example, not Bellator, so to speak, but Eddie Alvarez was a beast in Dream against top-level competition. I mean, when he beat Joachim Hansen via decision, I mean, these are fights where these guys are in the pocket banging for 15 minutes. I mean, some of these guys in the UFC don't even consider staying in the pocket for 10 seconds. I'm just saying what I've seen in the past from Alvarez.
Well, like I said, I mean, I think it's going to be a good fight. I just think he's going to get caught. I guess that's the simplest way to look at it. I mean, I think this is, like I said, will be the fight of the night. I think we're going to really go, and when we look back at this card, the thing we're going to remember most of all will be Alvarez Cerrone going at it that first round, you know, throwing leather, and then Cerrone's going to realize in the second round that I better put this kid away or I'm going to be in trouble. And I think that's how it ends. I think Cerrone gets him in the rear naked choke or some sort of submission on the ground, and I think that's where we go from there.
That's a fair assessment. It could happen. I'm going to go Alvarez, and I'm going to say a late first-round TKO Alvarez.
Interesting. Now to the fight that is the main event, but I don't feel bad saying this. I'm not really looking. I like Dominic Mighty Mouse. Dominic, I'm sorry. Demetrius.
You're thinking of Dominic Cruz.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to see him come back. I really.
There you are.
I think that Fox Sports 1 prelims is going to really get me going. I want to see this card. I mean, I'm buying the card. I'm really enthused. I haven't.
You're buying it? We're not doing Hooters?
Well, I didn't say that I was buying it as in pay-per-view. I was buying it as in Subway. Either going to the Apples.
I'm doing Hooters because I got to see some cleavage as I'm watching some fights. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe Amanda Nunez. Well, never mind.
Is she going to show up at the Hooters after she fights?
Exactly. But we'll put it that way.
All right, we're really going off it. Hey, it's fun.
It's
fun, and that's what it's supposed to be.
Absolutely. So we got Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, who's 22-1, versus Chris Carrioso, who is 17-5, who's ranked number 8. Now, we can go right here, and you can start going crazy about a number 8 guy getting a shot. But
you go crazy?
Just a little.
Anyone ever read my blog going crazy? What? look, I can't deny my not having enough knowledge on this division from top to bottom of the 15 fighters in this division for me to say definitively that Carrioso is not better than the 7 guys in front of him, excluding Benavidez, perhaps. I don't know. Normally I would go crazy, but in this case, I will not. With that said, Demetrius Johnson via decision. Do we need to get into it? I mean, seriously?
I mean, he has looked good and has shown a little bit of power lately, but I don't see how he doesn't win by decision. Not, and this isn't saying that Carrioso is going to do some amazing job, but I don't see how he's won. He has won, you know, 2 of his last 3 fights. He's won by KO and submission, so he's showing a little bit more there. I mean, he stopped Benavidez. He stopped Moraga. But you know, there's many times of the Dotson, the first Benavidez fight, the McCall fight, the second McCall fight, where it has been decision, 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 decision. It reminds you a lot of another, a guy who's a former champion now, Benson Henderson.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but at the end of the day, I don't see Johnson losing right now. Not yet. I don't even know if there's a guy. I really probably have to do a little more research on the division and say, is there a guy in that division right now who can beat Demetrius Johnson?
I honestly don't see who can. I mean, he's basically beating everyone in the division. I mean, maybe John Lineker can get back up to a title shot. I don't have that. I don't think that any of the other guys. He beat the number. He's beating the number 7 guy. He's beating the number 5. He's beating the number 3. He's beating the number 2. He's beating the number 1.
And is there anyone at bantamweight that's going to come down? I don't see that happening. Do you?
Maybe. Can you see maybe Uriah Faber deciding to for a super fight against Demetrius Johnson, or do you think him going losing another 15 and another 10 pounds?
How many times can Faber drop weight before it's a, I remember Kenny Florin recently joked that he can't make bantamweight because he made every other weight class. He's like, I can't do that. It was really funny.
Like I said, you know, you run out of contenders and you wonder what's going to happen to a Demetrius Johnson. I mean, Demetrius Johnson has shown that he's fast as lightning, but he's not strong enough to fight at 135.
Yeah, and by the way, I have zero interest in seeing another Dawson fight. I mean, that was a love affair. I was waiting for them to start making out during the fight. I never want to see those two fight again.
Oh, you mean you didn't see the behind the scenes footage? No, just kidding.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But you know what? Like I said from the beginning, I think this is going to be a really good show. I think this is a show that you should go out of your way to go and see. And like I said, you know, you've got fights even in the preliminaries. Like I said, John Howard versus Brian Ebersole, Patrick Coste versus Stephen Thompson. You got fights that on any other show, on one of these fight pass shows or fight nights, would be cards that you would see in the main event. Not in the main event slot.
What you're saying is, order UFC for 999. Oh, wait, it doesn't start on
them. Well, you know, if that could be in a couple of months, you know. After, I guess, a 3 or 4 month window, you might be able to see this on Fight Pass for the $9.99.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I had to do that one time on the show.
Not a problem. We'll be back in a moment with our final takes. And thanks again for listening to the first show. The MMA Hybrid has reached the final round, and we have a few parting shots to get to before we forget. Vanderlei Silva, one of the great, I guess we could say, not clean fighters in the history of mixed martial arts, decided that it's time to call it a career, and it's not by his own choice. Maybe it is when, you know, you refuse to take, you know, drug tests, but he's done now, and the UFC is not releasing him, so he can't run off and fight for Bellator. That's one of those things where Vanderlei had a great reputation. It's a shame that it had to end this way. But if it does come to an end like this, he had his great moments. And I guess in the end of the day, Chael Sonnen was right. I mean, he didn't wind up being clean himself. But Vanderlei, sorry to see it go, but
yeah,
maybe
but
we'll see
this.
It someday.
We knew this a long time ago. We knew this in Pride. Look, here's the reality. Most of these UFC guys that came from Pride, they were all juicing to the gills in Japan. All these guys were so juiced. I mean, that's where Alistair Overeem started his juice process. I mean, forget about it. There's no doubt Overeem was on. I mean, not Overeem. I should say Vanderlei. No question about it.
Absolutely. And
but I'm happy. I don't know about you, but I'm thrilled that they're cleaning the sport up. It just has to be cleaned up.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, Vanderlei, the axe murderer, had his great moments. I mean, I'm not going to forget anytime soon him facing Keith Jardine, where basically the bell rings, they both walk into the middle, Vanderlei punches him in the face, and it's over. That's still one of the great knockouts.
Yeah, and then the steroid needle popped out of his ass.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some guys, once they got out of Pride, they were smart enough to stop taking the juice or not at least to get caught. So Vanderlei,
they all cycle up. They all of them are on it. It's just when they're not on it, they know not to be.
I mean, Vanderlei, I think in one of his parting shots, said something to the effect that it should only matter what's in your system the day of the fight. Whatever it takes you to get there in training, you shouldn't matter. I think if you're clean, you're clean, and I don't see any point in Vanderlei being able to fight again. But moving on quickly. We've got a couple of fights that will be coming up, which we found out as we were getting ready to come back for this final segment. And one of the big ones, UFC Fight 957, Frankie Edgar versus Cub Swanson, set for Austin, Texas. I think that's going to be a great fight. And realistically, whoever wins that fight should get the next title shot at 145.
I concur 100%. I believe Edgar's last fight was the trilogy against Maynard, correct?
I believe he I believe he fought once since then, but...
He's fought once since Maynard?
I didn't know that. I believe he fought Aldo.
Wait, what's wrong with me? My memory's atrocious. I'm sorry. There's so many... That's the thing. That's the problem. There's too many shows. I forget when a guy just fought. Look, if you're with me, just you know the deal. It's just like, what just happened? Oh, okay.
Too many fights, too short period of time, I guess is the best way to put it.
That's what it is.
Frankie Edgar is one of the great fighters that has, you know, is a lot of times he's on the wrong end of a decision. And I think this time around, I think he can be Cub Swanson. I think he will be Cub Swanson. And I think he'll get another shot at the champion, whoever it is at that point. If it's Aldo, if it's, you know, someone else. I think, oh, in his last fight.
Right? Mendez is fighting Aldo?
Yes, at UFC 179.
Did you see the quote? He said Aldo is just straight up an asshole.
Nice. Yeah, his last fight, he actually retired BJ Penn. That was Frankie Edgar's last fight in
Penn. Thank you.
July 6, 2014, UFC Ultimate Fighter 19 finale. And before that, he faced Charles Oliveira.
Okay, thank you for that.
No problem.
Sorry, internet. Sorry, world.
But so that should be a good fight. Nate Diaz is going to be coming back finally. I guess he finally realized he needed to get paid. His brother also will be fighting again, and his recent DWI won't keep him out of the super fight against Anderson Silva, which, you know, it's amazing. DWIs, I guess, don't mean as much as they used to, but you know what? Like we said earlier, there aren't that many superstars, and even though he doesn't win as much as he should, Nick Diaz is a guy who draws pay-per-view buys.
Oh, without question. Listen, when he fights Anderson Silva, there's no doubt in my mind we're looking at a million buys. There's a handful of fights coming up, and we're going to get a million buys out of a couple of them. I think we're looking at, without question, Jones Cormier will be a million buys. This fight you just mentioned, Diaz Silva, will be a million buys. I think there's one more on the horizon that's going to be close.
I think you have you're more than likely right on that, and I can definitely see that happening.
By the way, Maynard just recently lost to Ross Pearson. I had to look that up because it was bothering me. I don't know why I thought Maynard just fought. Wow, that's bad. Okay, bad job by me, everybody.
And you know, the last thing before we get out of here, we've had a great time this first episode. Can somebody explain to me what has Jimmy Manoa done in his career that he deserves to headline a UFC fight night against Mauricio Shogun Rua? I mean, the guy basically was put in there to get killed by Alexander Gustafsson. He beat Ryan Jimmo. I mean, he beat Kyle Kingsbury. These aren't exactly the big names that gives you any right. And Jimmy Manoa, I'm sure he's a great guy, but there's no reason why he should...
How do you know he's a great guy? What if he kills, like, praying mantises? How do you know?
Hey, praying mantises could kill you, so I'm gonna be okay with that.
Okay.
But there's no way. I know that Shogun has gotten older, and he's mostly reached the point in his career where he's going to be, as like a wrestling term, putting other guys over. Of course, it's real, so you never know what can happen. But I think Shogun should be getting better opponents who've at least done more than Jimmy Manoa. I mean,
that's a good thought. What is he ranked, by the way? Is Manoa even ranked?
I believe he's in the top 15. He might be right outside of it, so I'm not a...
He's 11. He's 11 fighting Shogun, who is, by the way, 9. So when you look at it, it's not that bad.
I guess you have a point there, but I don't know. When I think about Shogun and Manoa, it just doesn't sound like at this point a fight that should be headlining a card. I know they run 4,000 cards a year.
Yeah, 4,000, exactly. That's the problem. That's why they have to do this. Right. By the way, Shogun looked really good coming off of his win against Tahuna. Looked like he was back to being Shogun, and then gets caught against Van Henderson. So you just don't know which Shogun's going to show up.
True. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, like I said, we've got a lot of good things that look like they're on the horizon, including this Saturday. But before we get out of here, I just want to once again let everybody know that this is the first episode, which I hope will be one of many, going forward. We'll see exactly when we'll be back on again, but I'd like to thank Christopher Morin from Morin's Law for joining me today.
It was fun to be here, and I look forward to many more shows. And it's all about ratings, so don't forget to buy the network for Nine. Wait a second. That's the wrong show. Sorry.
It's actually Fight Pass in this particular for $9.99.
Yeah, we'll yeah. Wrong entertainment. Sorry.
But like I said, it's been really really fun. You know, doing this afternoon. And if you want to check out some of Christopher Morin's work, you can go to morinslaw.com to read his blog. If you want to check out more of my stuff, Paladin808 on Twitter. And, of course, the Work Shoot Wrestling Podcast, which is Worked Shoot Pod on Twitter. So
that's a lot to say.
It's a mouthful. Usually Jason, you know, Jason Brooks, my co-host, usually takes care of all these, you know, big sentences and long things. But like I said, we're really, really happy that you guys decided to go and check us out. We'll keep you updated on the Twitter to see if when there'll be another show and any other news.
Wait, do ratings determine whether or not there'll be another show? I'm confused by that statement.
Well, we'll see how many people on Podomatic decide to go and check out the show. And
people like us or hate us? Is there like a click thing where they'd be like, these guys suck?
I'm sure there is, but I'm not going to tell people how to do that.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, they could say they love us, or they could tell us, get the fuck off. I can do that, right? Because this is not terrestrial radio. I could curse.
Absolutely. We went from a clean to an explicit with 30 seconds left in the program. But, you know, check us out on Twitter at MMA Hybrid Pod. And we'll be back hopefully sooner than later with another program. Chris, like always, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I don't believe he is my toughest test to date. I believe I see a weakness in him. I see timidness. I see fear. I see doubt. I see a broken man when I look at him. Personally, I feel like it will be an easy contest. But defeating him in the manner that I will defeat him in will definitely throw me up onto that list. It will definitely put pressure on the UFC brass like the fan pressure after this performance. It's going to be too much for Dana and Lorenzo to handle. They're going to have to give in. Okay, let's give this man a title shot before all hell breaks loose. And then, lo and behold, the Irish King comes and takes that belt home.